Hello everyone, and welcome to our latest Charter Digital podcast. Today we're calling all content marketing and fundraising listeners as we're talking about tone of voice. I'm particularly looking forward to this one as I've seen loads of great examples of charities using the right tone of voice to convey very powerful messages. How you speak to your audience matters, from building trust to being clear, showing respect and sensitivity, and differentiating your charity from others. It's important that you get it right. Using the right tone of voice is about being intentional with your words in order to build the best relationships possible with your service users, your supporters, and all the other stakeholders. However, we know that communication can take a backseat in a charity sector because there's a lot of crisis after crisis, obviously the cost of living crisis, and before that, the COVID-19. So that's adding more immediate pressures around service deliveries and fundraising. So now, perhaps we are in August, it's a good time to take a step back and to have a listen, because we'll go into providing a quick guide on to how to cultivate an appropriate tone of voice, including the immediate actionable steps you can take to make sure that your message is both understood and taken to heart. And who best to talk about tone of voice than our very own content team? So very warm welcome to you, Josie Sparling, Laura Stanley, and Johan Mark-Jones.
Hello.
Hello.
We're going to explore why tone of voice is so important, the universal rules that every charity should follow, and plenty of other factors to consider. And like I said, key actions and key takeaways. So without further ado, let's get started. Why is it important to have awareness of your tone of voice as a charity? Maybe that's one for you, Johan?
Yeah, sure. I think tone of voice is just the way that language is used. That's not just written language, but commonly that's what we're referencing. It was something that struck me as you were talking, that's also something our tone of voice is presented in these podcasts, and it's presented when you're on stage at conferences and so on and so forth. So I think that's all really important. It's just about building trust, loyalty, authority, and making yourself memorable as a charity, as a brand. Generally, I think we've seen a lot of people doing over the years, there's a lot of memorable brands, I think, maybe more than charities. I've got a few charities I'd like to shout out, but brands, people like, I mean, Private Eye have a quite memorable sort of publication that have such a known tone of voice. It's irreverent, it's cutting. If you look at The New Yorker, it's clean, it's funny, it's intelligent without being too condescending. The Economist is factual, it's clean. And then you've got brands such as, you know, Nike. And I think we'll talk a little bit about audience as well later in the podcast. But I think that's interesting. When you look at those three publications I mentioned, Private Eye, The New Yorker, The Economist, they know their audience and they know how they'll respond to it. And they've cultivated an entire tone of voice around that. Some brands like Nike, obviously, they appeal to sort of younger people typically. So they have these positive and sort of inspirational messaging, and all their comms is defined by that. So it's the way they speak. There's lots of charities that use tone of voice that's appealing to their audience. So if you look at Mind, for example, they have this warm, welcoming, simple language rather than clinical, which appeals to people who are experiencing mental health problems. Macmillan is very factual, but they're always sensitive and striking that good balance. Mm-hmm. Guide Dogs, for example, these are just three that I picked out: upbeat, emotive, but still informative. So I think I think tone of voice is an art, not a science. There's things you can do to ensure you get it right, but it's more an implicit understanding. So like, obviously I edit a lot of the stuff and write some of the stuff on the website, as to Laura and Josie. And I don't think of tone of voice when I'm writing, but I know what it's not. So it's better to identify what tone of voice isn't. If you speak outside tone of voice, I know it hits me. It stands out outside our tone of voice. That's where editorializing we always read each other's work too, we'll notice that. So maybe I'll just wrap up there by saying, I think it's best to think about what it's not rather than what it is.
Not what it is.
No, I think that's a really good point. Yep. And just to jump in on that, what I was going to say or lead with was that you have a tone of voice, whether you like it or not, as a charity.
Yeah.
And people will know if, I think defining what it's not is a really important step into defining what it is, because I think the minute you step out of it, people will not like that. And I think that's why this, I'm trying to think of brands that step out of their line of their, what they would, what would usually be authentic. And then that's when they hit the headlines, because it's not what they would, you'd expect from them. And so I think that, it's important to know what it's not as much as it is what it is. And I was reading some of the brand guidelines from the RNLI, and they have a section that they have what it is and what you should, the three sort of pillars of their tone of voice, but they also do have a box that says what it's not. And I just think that's really important.
Interesting, yes.
And they were like little synonyms. So the three things that they are active, personal, and reliable. And the things that they should not be were passive, impersonal, and erratic. But then they also added, as part of passive, that could be unadventurous or dull or stale. Impersonal can mean irrelevant. So it's irrelevant to the people that your audience is. So therefore it's impersonal, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And then erratic is gimmicky and unprofessional, which, does not fit in with their reliable, trusted authority sort of voice. Yeah. So I just think it's really good that they had both of those things. So you can define reliable a bit better, because you're like, oh, it's not that.
Yeah.
It's not being
gimmicky. Yeah. That's really interesting. And Josie, do you want to add to...
Yeah. So I think it's important, because it's important to be clear about what you do as a charity, just so people, like anyone, could look at what you're writing and understand what your purpose is and like what your kind of personality is as a charity. I suppose that's a weird way of putting it, to say personality, but it's kind of, that's what makes people understand what you do and who you kind of like, what your identity is, I guess, as an organization. And I think tone of voice is a big part of that. And I also think it's important because it can help you be sensitive to your audience, whether that's your people who use your services or supporters or your employees or whoever it is, or just the general public. I think it can show that you understand them and their needs. And I think that's why it's important.
Absolutely. And what you shared also reminded me that some charities more than others, and that's probably what we'll get to in a second, but maybe some charities that have royal patronage, for instance, and really, really need to get their tone of voice perfect at all times, whether that's on their website, whether that's somebody talking at an event or on their social media. So there's even more specific kinds of charities that probably do spend quite a lot on refining their tone of voice, and like you were saying, having almost like a table of what it is and more importantly what it is not, so that it can help them avoid not sounding genuine. Those are very good points. And based on what you said, are there any universal rules that all charities should follow when thinking about their tone of voice? Johan?
Yeah, I don't think you necessarily need to have simple or concise language. It was interesting you mentioned sort of royal patronage, and it immediately made me think of the King's English and how they would actually have a lot more incentive to use everything in its right and proper place. I think charities could in theory be play with language and grammar rules, but I've just never seen it done very well. They could have these long sentences like Tom Wolfe, and they could have Victorian prose. It's just, I've never actually seen anyone do that in a way that's appealing to me, appealing to other people too. So I think it's just about the universal rule, I would say, is having self-awareness is a definite one. So being aware of what you're saying. So it's how quickly your tone of voice can go from something that's coveted or something that's appealing to something that's very much not. And self-awareness is what will protect you, I think. Yeah. So the professional, for example, if you're aiming for a professional tone of voice, can easily come across as dull if you don't monitor that. The intelligent can come across as condescending. The comic can come across as flippant or worse, trivializing. So I think we'll talk a little bit about missions and stuff like that and how that should relate, but always being aware of your audience and the way that your tone of voice is set and how it could be perceived is probably the one universal rule I'd have, other than I probably follow the grammar rules, but even that I would say is probably not universal, but I'm sure Laura or Josie might disagree.
Well, would you?
Laura? No, I think having a house style is the most important thing you can probably do. And that That can, you have your own grammar rules in there. What is grammar but rules we made up? Right? I don't know. But I think having a house style, I think consistency is the main thing.
Yeah.
And that's where a house style is really helpful. So it doesn't matter if you want to talk in Victorian prose or you want to talk in a really, in text speak, I don't know. But as long as you are consistent with that, then that's probably going to be your tone of voice. It fits in. Depends who you're trying to talk to. But charities probably want to talk to a wide range of audiences. They don't want to be exclusive. And also, I imagine that for a lot of the communications we're talking about, it's about getting your cause and your mission and your goals across really clearly, like your impact, basically. So you probably wouldn't want to go for Victorian prose for that reason. But
why ever not?
But you can if you're a Victorian museum.
Yeah.
Also, simple is the best. So always write something. If it's really complicated at first, then it's a lot easier to edit it than to think of it more simply in your head first off. But a good way to do that, if you are going to try and do that, is to try and imagine you're explaining a concept to your friend at the pub. Because yeah, I think that's
absolutely
the easiest
somebody
way to form a sentence in your head.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Thinking about the 10 different bullet points you have to include in that one sentence.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, that's a very good point, Laura. Josie, would you like to add?
Yeah, I kind of do think, maybe I'm wrong, but I think in general, charities should use simple and concise language.
Victorian prose.
I suppose other things could appeal to different audiences, so I do understand that, but I think in general, aiming to be as simple as possible is a good idea.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes charities can have that, like what they do involves a lot of technical language or specific language. But I think kind of avoiding too much jargon and stuff like that. And maybe if needed, you could have a glossary. Like if you really need to use that kind of language, then make sure it's just clear. And yeah, the other thing is don't be patronizing or disempowering to your audience and kind of listen to how they want to be represented and what matters to them in what they want to hear from you about. Yeah, and be kind of accurate when you're talking about, especially about the services you, about your services and about the people who you serve. Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah,
you know, that's a very good point. And I like the fact that you mentioned a glossary, because sometimes when it comes to health related charities, they need to have specific publications aimed at different stakeholders, so perhaps like medical professionals or commissioners, etc. And so they need to have a bit of that jargon. But if they clearly signpost in their comms and the way they write it that this is aimed at that specific group within that audience, then so long as they're clear and concise, then that group of people will know that this more jargony but obviously more professional type of publications are there for them. But for you know, some marketing and user generated content and fundraising content, then it's more in, as we would say, perhaps layman terms, so that everybody would engage and resonate with that. Those are very, very interesting points. And obviously I know I mentioned few perhaps different stakeholders, but what are the other factors that could influence the tone of voice a charity uses? Laura, do you want to go?
The first one that comes to mind is the channel or platform that you're talking on. And again, not to go back to RNLI, but because I looked at their tone of voice guides, I then decided to look at their social media channels. And I went on their TikTok, I went on their Instagram, and I went on their Twitter. And what was interesting to me is that the message was all the same, but the ways they were talking were really different. So TikTok tended to be a bit more like it had pop music in the background and they were responding to people's messages. It was a lot more sort of community led, I would say. It was really personal. And then on Twitter, it was a lot more, this is where you can find this exact information. I mean, it still had video content and but it was very about broadcasting information, conveying information. But then on their Instagram, it was all images and these really sort of clean, beautiful images with the story underneath. And it was a bit more storytelling, I would say. But when I compared their social media to what they were saying on their style guide, I thought it was really interesting because of those three pillars that I mentioned mm-hmm. earlier, what they say is that you can tone them up and down for each platform. So they're still right at the heart of all their content. So they are still being personal on TikTok and still being personal on Instagram, but they tailor those columns. They sort of talk, it's like they've got a little toggle dial. They dial it up and down depending on the platform, but keep those things still central and part of it. And I think that's really interesting.
Really?
And it's a good way of thinking about tone of voice, I think. And a good way of keeping it consistent, even though, as we said, there are external factors that will make it mm-hmm. change. And also that goes for audiences as well, because each platform's going to have a different audience. TikTok tends to skew younger, and Twitter skews older.
Yeah.
She X. says using mm-hmm. Twitter. So yeah, I think that's the biggest thing I can think of.
Yeah, this is a really good point, actually, and probably a cue for all of your listeners to go and check the RNLI channels mm-hmm. because they definitely know what to do. Obviously, we all remember that they were embroiled in some, unfortunate controversy with some members of the public, and the way they responded was really well respected and regarded.
Within their tone of voice, still keeping
they
on the
remained,
message.
Yeah, they remained consistent with their tone of voice. I don't know if you wanted to add more, Josie, to the different factors that could influence the tone of voice.
Yeah, so I think as well the nature of what the charity does would very much influence how they talk to their audience. So if it's something like social inequality, it might be a bit more kind of direct and maybe trying to express solidarity with the people and have a different tone, as opposed to like if your charity is to do with illness, it could be more reassuring and more kind of easier to read and less confrontational. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. the right word. But kind of, yeah. And an example I found was Macmillan Cancer Support, who has they have like tone of voice guidance that anyone can read. And it's they call it a creative spectrum. So it's got five different approaches to communicating depending on what they want to achieve. And because the charity is so large and they do so many different things, it makes sense. So it kind of ranges from fun and entertaining to brave and bold. And it's really good because they have like to describe what that means. They say, this is as if we're talking to a friend's mum, or this is as if we're talking to a good friend. So that helps you understand, that helps you put it into practice, I suppose. So that also depends on the type of information that they're actually putting across. So if it's like for a fundraising appeal, it would be fun and entertaining. Whereas for like campaign posters, that would be the fall under brave and bold. So I think that's a really good way of categorizing it.
Thank you. And you want to add, Johan?
I think they, Josie and Laura covered the two most pressing things, which is, the platform you're using and your mission or your values. And I think I just reiterate that there is something else in terms of your audience that Josie sort of touched on, which is their politics. And I think this might not be the most sort of appealing thing to mention, but I sometimes find when charities are speaking to people they shouldn't be necessarily aware of their political beliefs. That's kind of not what charities do, but it's almost how you appeal to these select people. And it's kind of consideration of that. It's not to suggest any party politics. I just mean an intention within what you're saying. So there's values, obviously a mission should drive this, but how it's going to be received. And I thought it just sparked a little bit of interest when Josie mentioned like inequality, charities tackling inequality, because they do have a more sort of charged almost rhetoric.
Absolutely.
And then humanitarian crises, for example, I mean, that can go either way. They can be more lobbyist or lobbying for international or diplomatic community response and stuff like that. So I think an awareness of the political outcomes or the social outcomes as well is kind of implicit within that. But other than that, I would just say as a staple to start, if we're talking of key actions, which I think we're going to get onto, the one of the things you definitely want to do immediately is define your values and define your missions in the clearest terms. I think big charities, which is largely what we've mentioned so far, are very good at that. And the reason is probably why they're also big charities. Yeah. You know, they're an important cause. We know what they stand for. Smaller charities are less sort of often less equipped or don't have the resources to completely mm-hmm. or have just had less success in doing that. So I think the first thing any small charity or medium-sized charity that don't think they've quite nailed their mission or values yet is to write it down, make an elevator pitch essentially, and ensure that's perfected and build your tone of voice from there, I would say.
Yes, yes, agree, yes. There's a charity that I follow on social media that's called, well, I will say it here, Pregnant Then Screwed, which is a really, really great charity. And it's essentially what you were saying. They are, I find they're quite good and skillful at talking about facts, obviously. The topic is very politically charged because it's about childcare in the UK, but they stick to facts. And then, you know, whether the audience they have are whatever political party or political views they have, people can, you know, join and agree on certain things and on certain facts or disagree on facts. Yes. But there's no too much political nuance that you don't want your charity to go into because this is not your terrain, this is not your bread and butter. You're here to support a specific mission and specific beneficiaries. So a learning I think I have from following these kind of charities is how well you need, from a charity perspective, you need to stick to facts remove any sort of emotional tone to facts, but then link the facts back to what you are about and what your message and what your mission is all about.
Yeah.
So that I know there's a lot of talks in a charity sector about some charities being viewed as too political, and is a very difficult exercise for many, many marketers, charity marketers and charity fundraisers to have their tone right, still convey the same message without sounding too political because you don't want to put off any specific stakeholders
There's legal elements to it as well, obviously. But I think one thing to maybe mention on the political side is that you've always got a balance of where you're going to ostracize certain people and accepting that too. So the RNLI, again, they ostracized and faced a lot of political backlash from certain sections of the political spectrum, if you want to call it that, which is a bit of a simplification, but nonetheless. And I think they just accepted that because they knew what their voice, they knew their mission, and they knew, and sticking to that, despite not, this wasn't an actively political thing. In fact, they contextualize it outside the spectrum of politics.
Yeah, or that's what they, absolutely.
If I remember right, it was six months ago.
They did a really good job of coming back.
But they said their mission is to support the people.
Human life.
Human life in... Well, on
in the sea.
In the sea. Yes, in danger at sea.
And that ostracized people. And I guess the lesson from that is don't be afraid to ostracize people so much so that you don't engage anyone, I guess. It's like they engage a lot of people and got a lot of support for what they do, but they have to accept that certain people in this world
won't and resonate with their message.
And that's fine. That's a trade-off essentially in some way.
And the RNLI had a record fundraising year. I was reading a report about the rise of inverse giving, which is when charities hit the headlines for ostensibly the wrong reasons, because it's being politicized or whatever. And people give to that charity. This is what happened with the RNLI. People give to a charity in support of it because they're like, that's not what they feel it reflects their values. And
exactly.
And RNLI did a really good job of going straight back to the facts and straight back to their mission and talking about why they mattered, and they took any debate out of it, which I thought it was really good was way really of good. Diffusing the situation.
Yes, absolutely. No, I agree.
That's knowing your tone of voice.
Exactly. And then I know we shared quite a lot of ideas here. So what do you think are the key actions that charities can take, you know, today, this week, to develop their tone of voice or harmonize it? Maybe you want to start, Josie.
Yeah, so I would start with looking at anything that's evergreen on your, say, on your website or on your any other communications you might have, and just prioritizing that first, because obviously that's going to be seen, continue to be seen by the most people. And anything like saying about us section in what you kind of making sure that is like an elevator pitch or something, like something that clearly defines what you do and has the right tone of voice. I think a good exercise is basically what Laura said earlier, just how do you describe what your charity does to your friends and family and come at it from that perspective, because that is the most clear way of saying what you do. And yes, just the other thing is to write a basic house style.
Yeah.
And just summarize how you want to come across, how you don't want to come across. Mm-hmm. So the last thing I want to mention is that we have talked a lot about kind of understanding your audience, and that is extremely important, but also have in mind who you are as an organization and balance both, and don't just try to second guess like what other people want from you.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like what has already been said, like don't try to predict what everyone is going to want, mm-hmm. but actually just keep your own core values in the front of your mind, and your identity and kind of your purpose, and just balance that with all the other information you have as well.
Yes, that's a very good point.
Yeah, and Joanne, to build on that, I would just say, so the house style was mentioned and Laura mentioned it earlier. I think create an inclusive language guide, an image style guide, a tone of voice guide. And that can just be simply explaining it. Have your missions, your values at the core of it. And then doing stuff like having adjectives that define it, like formal and playful and stuff like that. And then also just if you want to go further, you could have a do's or don'ts of tone of voice. You know, like we said, the ways to notice what it's not and ways to notice what it is. And the final thing I would say just in terms of key actions is make sure that this is implicit throughout your organization. Yeah. So onboarding, for example, one of the first things, I mean, we did as a team is once the house style is there, we'd ask people to read the house style. It's really hard because people outside of content teams don't, this isn't shade at anyone at Charity Digital, but they're not as used to it. I in our backgrounds, we all read the house styles or looked at house styles, but that's not always the case. So really try and push it throughout the organization, because stuff in an ideal world, your tone of voice will seep into every element of charities.
All that means interactions.
It's emails, external emails should in theory be in your tone of voice. All comms, if you're on a stage and you're representing the charity, that should be in your tone of voice. And so almost everything should be. So if you can get that right from the beginning and that's in onboarding, then I think use the policies, onboard the people with tone of voice in mind, and then you should see less resistance going forward, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Laura, you want to add?
I agree. I also think that you can have house guides for different types of people. So if you want to talk on to different demographics, it's okay to have break your style guide down in terms of that.
Yeah.
So you can say, this is what these people like. They like it bold, they like it colourful, they like interesting, less formal language. And then other people like, as we
loads
were saying,
loads of facts, figures and
The other thing to remember, I think, is which sort of comes down to Johan's point on the having a house style guide that the whole organization is aware of and knows where to find, is that remember that you don't have a voice on everything. And so try and sort of everyone in the organization needs to know where that voice is appropriate, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm, yep.
So there's going to be jokes and memes, especially if you're a social media manager, where no one wants to hear your opinion on that because you're a charity and it's relevant in different areas. It's sort of a little bit like what Josie was saying about staying true to yourself. And it's just always keeping that in your head. And I think it would be worth having those, whether it's three pillars in your style guide, whether it's a table of what you are and what you're not, or whether it's literally a sentence that you can ask yourself, does this fit with everything? Because I think that way you can justify all of your content.
Yeah.
And if you can't justify it, don't put it out. And that all comes down to tone of voice. And another thing, and I know I've been banging on about it, but I really do think that it's worth checking out that RNLI style guide. And it is because they're a large charity, but also there's so much value in that. And I think it would make a really good framework for other charities who are interested in looking at a style or house style guide or branding guidelines. But what they say to their charity, to their employees and to their colleagues, is that remember that tone is not the same as message. So different airlines are trying to sell plane tickets, but they do it in different ways.
Ryanair
talks to you very differently to the British Airways.
To the British Airways, absolutely. So, that's a very good analogy. Yes, I like it. Somebody who's a freaking flyer.
Well done, the RNLI. Yeah.
No, but yeah, that's really interesting. Well, hopefully all of this discussion really helped you, or helped provide a few nuggets of information for all of you to have maybe have a review of your tone of voice and see what other peers and people within the sector are doing and what you can get inspiration from. But thank you very much to all three of you for taking the time to sharing your expertise about tone of voice.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope that you enjoy this podcast, and please don't forget to subscribe. We will speak to you again soon.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.